Well, we're back, and as promised, we have Suzanne Wright with us today. And we're going to chat about another one of her Destination Worldview pieces, and the subject of which has always been kind of a favorite of mine, and is bargaining with confidence while traveling. And India is where it all takes place. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hi, Roy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I'm doing super.
Good. India. I didn't just want to lay it on to you like that, but, you know, you start out your article, which is very interesting, and I've always been a great bargainer because I've spent a lot of time in third world countries, and what you say is really kind of funny is that during one of your recent visits to India, you were told by a local that Indians even negotiate their birthdays. Now, I'd like to negotiate mine, but I'd like to get rid of half of it.
I think there's a lot of us who'd like to do that, right?
Anyway.
Well, as you know, bargaining is really a way of life in terms of transactions across a lot of the world outside of maybe the U.S. and Canada and maybe more traditionally Europe, but certainly in Africa and Asia, Middle East, parts of Latin America. Bargaining is really a way of life, whether you're buying carrots, or whether you're buying bolt fabric, or whether you're buying jewelry, or whether you're buying car parts.
It's the norm, isn't it?
It's the norm. It's absolutely the norm.
It's interesting because in the article you mentioned something that's very true, and it often makes many of us feel a little uncomfortable. I can remember at one point in Mexico. When my mother was with me, and she saw this beautiful ring, and this lady, it was there, and an older lady, and I kept saying no, and then she would come back, and my mother finally said to me, "Roy, please just give her the money, because I can't stand it any longer." But that's the trick, isn't it, to learn how to bargain.
Well, and I think one of the things that I wanted to underscore in the article is, you know, there is an emotional sensitivity that comes into play. You know, a lot of the places that we travel, we're able to go there because we have the ability financially, economically, to, you know, be privileged enough to enter another part of the world.
Exactly.
And a lot of people are really scrambling to make a living. And so we as tourists, travelers, non-natives are seen as a source of income, and rightly so. Many of these countries and many of the people that are engaged in tourism depend on the dollars that we spend on shopping,
right,
for their livelihood. So there is that part of it. And, you know, it reminds me of a time I was in China with a good friend of mine, and you know, at one point, Annie kind of nudged me and said, "Why are we haggling over what is essentially a $2 bottle of wine?" And we realized at that point the insanity of why are we having a 10-minute, you know, interchange over a $2 bottle of wine that we would have happily paid $8 or $9 for it were we back home in Atlanta, Georgia,
right,
or Colorado.
But the other side of that coin is, and I think as you point out even further on, is that people expect you to do this, and
yeah,
if you don't do it, they kind of look at you as if you're a little bit stupid, don't they? And maybe stupid's not the word, but it's just the way it's done, as you say. It's the way of life.
It's social lubrication. I mean, it's a social practice.
Right.
Bargaining for items, whether you're in a market or whether you're in someone's independent store, whether you're buying a rug, it doesn't really matter. It is used and often looked at as an opportunity for social exchange.
Right.
And
good
so
point.
Often, yeah, very often you're invited in for a cup of tea or a pastry.
Right.
And it means something very different than it means in the U.S. It's not a transaction like at Saks Fifth Avenue where you plunk down your credit card and, you know, 30 seconds later you've got it in the bag and you're out the door. No, this could be a 30-minute interchange.
Right. And it's... As you rightly point out in your article, it's how you handle it.
Yes. I have found that it is, the universal language is a smile and a sense of relaxation in your body language and a sense of openness and sort of a positive demeanor. And that will get you a lot further than aggressive steely, you know, glances and you know, a tough stance. That doesn't work well in a lot of the parts of the world that your listeners and I enjoy traveling.
And face is very important.
Absolutely. And you know, it's not meant to be a win-lose situation. I mean, you know, there are lots and lots of quote-unquote formulas for what you should pay for something.
Right.
But I think, you know, I think that it's important in any interchange to think about, you know, what's your ceiling? How much are you willing to pay for something? And what would you pay for a like item at home?
Right.
And, you know, give that some consideration. Maybe use that as you know, one marker or one benchmark. And then you can start, you know, having a bit of fun with it. But it isn't meant for you to... I think it's insulting and can be insulting if something is worth $100 and you offer a dollar.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe it's really worth $50.
Right.
But it isn't worth a dollar. And you know, you would be tossed out on your ear if you tried to do that in North America.
Right. Well,
it's not as though all bets are off and you're allowed to, you know, insult people that have, you know, that are selling handicrafts or that are selling, you know, family heirlooms or that are selling items of great value.
You insult the product, in fact, in that way. And the other part is there's always a rule of thumb. And I mean, I've always used in Mexico and Latin America, I always, you know, divided the price in half and worked down from there.
Right. You know, and I think it's important to recognize that, you know, there are things that really want, and that you're really going to be sad if you don't take this item home and have a story to share about. And I know for myself, when I was recently in Nepal, there was a necklace that I really coveted that was silver and had some coral and turquoise in it. And I went to the shop every day and looked at it, and I was rather timid about approaching this man because I knew that tourism was very slow and I felt sort of guilty. And finally I watched a woman engage him and begin a negotiation, and she ended up walking out with the item for about a third of the price, and both of them seemed happy with that result.
Right.
And nobody seemed demeaned or demoralized, and you know, they had a good, you know, 15 or 20 minutes back and forth, and you know, it gave me the courage to say, well, this is all I can afford to pay at this juncture. It may be worth more, but this is what I can pay.
Right, and the thing is that when you say it may have been slow, and sometimes if it wasn't really a terrific deal, although I always say if it's not a good deal for both sides, it's not a deal at all.
Right.
But the thing is that if it's slow, at least he took home a paycheck.
Well, you know what, and that's something that's, I'm really glad you brought that out, Roy. That's a good point. Sometimes our own best intentions get in the way, because the truth is I felt that, oh, gee, because it's slow, I shouldn't barter, and what he was thinking is exactly that. I haven't seen a customer in a day or two.
Right.
And I haven't sold anything, and selling something is better than selling nothing.
And I'll make it up on somebody that doesn't know how to negotiate.
There you go. Exactly.
Now, the other thing is, and it's something that I've always been very aware of, and you mentioned in the article, that even the locals aren't sure if they've gotten a good deal on certain things. And that's so very true, because that's all part of the system.
Right. It's interesting. You know how airline seats change prices depending on the day that you buy the ticket?
Right.
And what the load is? I think this is very, very true in negotiating prices on whether it's a disposable good or a durable good.
Right.
In
they call
a
it
country.
They call it capacity control.
There you go. Well, it's a way of controlling your wallet, I guess. You could look at it that way.
That's right. And
but I think that's very, very true. And you know, it's interesting too, because the person who told me that, you know, Indians negotiate their birthdays was an Indian, and it was a young woman who happened to be a very fair-skinned Indian woman who happened to be someone who had been educated abroad. And she said she did not receive the most preferential prices when she went to the market because she looked more affluent, even though she was Indian.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. If you get somebody who goes in there in a lesser attire, there's a fair chance that they're going to get a better price than somebody that looks a bit more wealthy, whether you're a local or whether you're a tourist. Well, tourists dress kind of tacky anyway sometimes.
And the point was, even though she was speaking, you know, in Hindi, you know,
right,
at the market, you know, to make her, you know, weekly food purchases, she just knew that because it was somewhat known that she was a woman, you know, who had a career, who had been educated outside the country, and, you know, who had the ability to pay, that she was going to pay a little bit more. And I remember that she told me something that stuck with me. She said, "Isn't it fortunate I am able to pay more?"
Right. That is interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting approach to it. And what does it matter? You still got a bargain, as you say, and who cares? Like the bottle of wine, you'd have paid $7 for it. You got
exactly.
it for two. If you got it for $1.75, you'd have more trouble making change.
You know, I have to tell you, I have lots and lots of souvenirs of different kinds from my travels, whether there are pieces of art in my home or pieces of clothing or jewelry, furniture, what have you. Never once does someone say, "Oh, tell me about that marvelous piece, and how much did it cost?"
Right.
It's always, "Tell me the story behind it," and it's more the story of how engaged you were in that culture, and it brings back the joy and the delight of the you know, people that you met and the landscape that you were in.
Right.
Never once do you remember, "Okay, I remember paying $4.69 for that item."
Right. It's the story behind it. I can remember one occasion when I was in East Africa, and we were going through a Maasai area, and one of the villagers wanted to ride with us, and because they're nomads anyway, they don't seem to care where they go. And I traded him something for a spear that he actually made himself, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point was, it wasn't what it cost. I don't even recall what I traded for it. It could have been Louisiana, for all
right.
I know. But the point, it's the story behind that spear, and that's what makes it important. And the other important thing I think you bring out is, you know, if you're not interested in it, don't bargain for it, and don't bargain for it when you're jet lagged or impaired by alcohol.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. That's definitely not a good idea. I think there is assumed that when you begin bargaining for an item,
right,
that you do have an intention to walk away with it. So you are going to disappoint and possibly cause bruised feelings if you get into a hard bargaining for 10 or 15 minutes and then you decide, it was just a lark. I was just kind of curious to test my skills. Not such a good idea. It doesn't make you friends. And in fact, in small markets in a lot of places, it seems to me that there are runners between the little booths, and the word gets out quickly that you may not be serious. So I don't think you really want to have that happen. There is a point at which, if you're serious about something as a tactic, you might try walking away. You don't need it, but that's a tough call.
And if it's like, say, if it's a one-of-a-kind item, you love it, buy it now. Don't wait.
Absolutely. I was really fortunate in that process in Nepal that there were not enough people coming through that shop that would have seen this beautiful item that I ultimately did, you know, purchase, and which I wear and love. But I have had my heart broken by, you know, either niggling over a few dollars or not acting swiftly enough for something I love. And, you know, this is part of the going with your gut instinct, I think. You know, that's part of it. You know, you just need to say, if I've got the $30 in my pocket and they're asking for $30, then that's what I should go ahead and hand over. And, you know, so that I'm ensured that I have it and I won't be thinking about it a week from now when I'm, you know, six cities away and I can't get back there.
Suzanne, great, great article, great information that you're sharing with us. And as always, it's a pleasure. We've got to run, and
no problem.
I'm looking forward to our next one.
Well, thanks so much, Roy, and everybody go enjoy shopping and bargaining with confidence.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, they can
care.
Now, Karen, now that you've shared all this wonderful information. Bye for
Have
now.
Fun.
Good, thanks. Well, that's great. Suzanne always has some great in-depth stuff for us, and you can go to our website and read the article and look at photographs more in depth. You can check out our program schedule by going to ttrn.com for the latest guest information. Next week, we have Karen Hamlin and Johnny Jett will be with us. So tune in at 11 a.m. next Wednesday to the Travel Talk Radio and Talking Travel. So this is Roy Lowy saying bye till next week. And Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida's Sun Coast and 24/7 online at ttrn.com. So now we're going to go back to our regular programming and process.